Rear dove in first. Cold at first. The water felt warmer as he rose toward the surface. After a few strokes, he knew that the sea that evening was warm, a warmth the seas in autumn had pulled from the heat stored in the earth for long months. He swam evenly. The fluttering of his feet left behind him a boiling froth as the water flowed along the length of his arms and turned back on itself around his legs. A loud smack told him that Taru had dived in. Rieur turned on his back and held himself still, facing the inverted sky, full with the moon and stars. He took a long breath. Then he perceived more and more distinctly the sound of lapping water, strangely clear in the silence and solitude of the night. Taru was coming closer. One would soon hear his breathing. Rieur flipped back over and swam with the same rhythm. Taru moved with more power than he, and he had to hurry his pace. For a few minutes, they advanced with the same cadence and vigor. Alone, far from the world, finally released from the city and the plague. Albert Camus, in his novel, The Plague. Welcome to Delmarva Today. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. In Camus' classic novel, Rieur and Taru are swimming. It's the warm Mediterranean off the coast of Oran, a plague-ridden Algerian city locked in quarantine. The water surrounds the two swimmers, supports their bodies, offers freedom from the world, liberation from the city, and from the plague. With such solace the water gives, it is little wonder that people here have flocked to the beaches during our own pandemic. May is Water Safety Month, and my guest this morning is Owen Long. Owen is the Chief Executive Officer and co-founder of Certified, a training company specializing in American Red Cross lifeguarding, CPR, first aid, AED, babysitting, emergency medical response, basic life support classes, and generally any instructor training. Owen, welcome to Delmarva Today.
Thanks, Hal. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate you taking the time to have me on.
Oh, wonderful to have you here. Owen, tell us a bit about your company. As I get from your website, you're basically a training company.
Yeah, that's right, Hal. We are an American Red Cross licensed training company. And kind of like what your introduction said there, we specialize in providing high quality, efficient training all across the state of Maryland that aims in educating and certifying lifeguards, people how to do CPR, provide first aid, become babysitters, and be able to apply these skills in really a variety of settings. Our students leave and kind of carry their skills with them to all walks of life. But yeah, at the core of it, we train and we make sure we do it in a way that is consistent and high quality in correspondence with our American Red Cross curriculums that we have in front of us.
Well, as I read your website, Owen, and I saw babysitting there as one of your training activities. And I have to say, lumped in with first aid, AED, CPR, emergency medical response, Should mothers be worried all across the country that you have to give training now in babysitting, or are you taking 12 to 14 year old kids and doing babysitting with them?
That's funny that you mentioned that. Well, yeah, we do teach them that first aid and that CPR care. God forbid an emergency would happen. That class is really interesting because it also teaches basic resume writing, how to feed an infant, how to feed a child. It talks about resources within the home for those babysitters to use to protect themselves. So while yes, we do prepare for the worst, we also prepare them to offer a quality babysitting service for often what may be their first job as a 12 to 14 year old.
Well, I don't want to dwell on this particularly, but who calls on you for babysitter training?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we post, all of our classes are open to the public, right? So anything that we teach is on the American Red Cross website. It's on our website. So oftentimes, this is a sought-after certification that people know that they can use to kind of market themselves as a babysitter and receive training to be able to provide a safe babysitting and quality babysitting experience. But also, we go out and train agencies like the Girl Scouts. A lot of those girls like to come and do some stuff that with babysitting training. And it just is a community-wide effort at that point for any really groups that would like to offer that.
Well, you do a lot of work training lifeguards. And you say you do this with the American Red Cross. What is your relationship with the Red Cross? And then tell us a bit about the lifeguard training that you do.
Yeah, of course. So I would say my relationship with the Red Cross is kind of twofold. So I have a national relationship with the Red Cross with my company certified. And then I also have a very local connection to the Red Cross as I am on the board of directors for the Delmarva chapter. We always call it the American Red Cross's most Delmarvelous chapter. And that is something that I take great pride in, as I can have an effect very much on the local level. And we work with the disaster relief teams, with the blood drive teams, with training services to really have an effect right here on the Eastern Shore and on the Delaware coasts as well. But that being said, my relationship at the national level with the American Red Cross is we are a licensed training provider. So that's a status that you have to apply for and achieve with the American Red Cross. And particularly to the aquatic side of things, if you go and call your local Red Cross or you call a 1-800 Red Cross and you say, hey, is my Red Cross offering a lifeguarding class? They're going to tell you no, they are not, because the Red Cross actually in recent years has contracted out all of their aquatic training to these licensed training providers. So people like us are traveling the country or identified as groups that can travel the country to provide this training on behalf of the Red Cross. That being said, the curriculum is still very strictly regulated by the Red Cross, and we are bound by our code of conduct and our agreements with them to follow their curriculum, and their certification will ultimately say American Red Cross Lifeguard, but they're being trained by agencies such as mine, where we are at the ground level performing the nuts and bolts of the training.
Do you do training for the Red Cross in terms of their disaster relief activity?
So my local efforts as a member of the board, we do have some interaction with disaster relief. In fact, a lot of the efforts there are focused on disaster relief and management of the Eastern Shore. So hurricane, natural disasters, things of that sort. But in the training services aspect, no, we do not necessarily have training for disaster relief, but a lot of the funds that training services brings in. So when we're paying for these lifeguarding certifications or paying for these CPR certifications, a lot of those funds are turned around and flipped and used on the disaster services side. So they actually do have a direct effect and benefit to those responding to disasters.
Well, I said in my introduction that people were coming to the beaches, even when the beaches were closed earlier on during the pandemic. Is that your experience?
Yeah, so absolutely. And I'll give you a little bit of background on myself there. I've been teaching for the Red Cross for about 8 years now. And I have also been, for the majority of those years, a very active beach lifeguard at Assateague. So when all of this kind of rolled out, we were hearing, right, and we are still hearing, it's safer outside. It's safer outside. It's safer outside. And we remember the pandemic emerged in, you know, a little bit earlier than this time of year last year, but this is when we were really in the core of it. And this is when we start to see the weather getting a little bit nicer, the winds dying down, the water getting a little bit warmer. So if we're supposed to stay outside, well, we might as well go to the beach, right? And I was in a lot of discussion forums across the state with the Department of Natural Resources, with Maryland State Police, and we're obtaining all of this information as to, you know, people are going to start flocking to these beaches. And that's exactly what they did. Now, it posed an initial problem for us as a lifeguard training company. We do the majority of Maryland's lifeguard training. The vast majority of lifeguards in the state actually do come through our classes. So we're thinking this could pose a little bit of a problem, because over the past 2 or 3 months, we haven't been able to train these lifeguards. So there's going to be a lack of availability, a lack of trained and certified staff to kind of fill these voids in the areas that they're going to be needed. So as people started to flock to the beaches, we had to start working with the Maryland Department of Health, the American Red Cross, the Maryland State Police to develop protocols that allowed for safe in-person lifeguard training, because we needed to get these lifeguards trained and sitting in the stands at the beaches solely due to the flocking and vast numbers of individuals going and to these lakefronts, waterfront, oceanfronts, where lifeguards are usually staffed.
So lifeguards were placed on the beaches, even though the beaches were closed, Owen? Am I hearing this correctly?
So initially, there was actually no anticipation for those beaches to open. And it was a relatively abrupt change of events when the governor's order allowed for the beaches to open. And at that point, it was kind of a scram to get lifeguards out there. Prior to their opening, no, they were not there. There were some that were on, we had lifeguard standby crews, so that way there were water rescue trained and certified personnel, at least in the vicinity. But when the governor's order allowed for those beaches to open, it was a all hands on deck to get these individuals trained and then up into the stands. So that way now we could post the signs that lifeguards were on duty, and we knew that we were well past the point of stopping individuals for coming to the beach. So we needed to take a much more reactive approach and get people there to help monitor the situations that were going on these beaches.
What do you do when you train these lifeguards? What? Let me put it another way, on what are they trained to be able to do?
Yeah, so there's just like anything, the lifeguarding program is a tiered system. So we train the initial lifeguarding class to be able to basically recognize and respond to aquatic emergencies. So we teach very clearly signs and symptoms of somebody who may be in distress, signs of and symptoms of somebody who has actually started an active drowning process, recognizing somebody who may have become passive in the water as the result of a sudden medical emergency, of underwater inhalation, right? So we teach a lot of those basic identification skills. And then we even kind of throw times on things. So lifeguards have 30 seconds to recognize and respond to somebody in the water. We're training that critical eye, that really prompt reaction to a situation. But then we're also, while we spend a lot of our time addressing characteristics of a trained professional lifeguard that are preventative, we also spend a lot of our time on what care do we provide in kind of a reactive measure. So we teach signs and symptoms of sudden illness, injuries, responding to cardiac emergencies, breathing related emergencies, broken bones, severe bleeding, allergic reactions, so basic medical needs that may arise while you're at the pool or you're at the waterfront. We're teaching these lifeguards to really be first on the scene and get the response needed and identify that you know 911 may be needed and additional services may be required. That being said, I mentioned it's kind of a tiered system, Hal. So we have that kind of base level lifeguarding class. It's about 22 hours in person and an additional about 8 hours of training online before they even get to us at the in-person training. And then there's also waterfront lifeguarding, which has some additional requirements and additional skills that need to be performed, basically to rescue somebody in open water. So there's going to be different scanning challenges, right? We can't see the bottom in open water. There may be waves. There may be additional injuries that could occur and require different immobilization techniques. If there's some sort of spinal or head injury, we may be able to use rescue boards. So we have, again, additional equipment that we integrate at what we call that waterfront lifeguarding level. There's additional certifications for people who work at water parks or aquatic attractions specific to slides, specific to very shallow areas, specific to winding rivers, moving water. So the techniques are very niche to the type of lifeguarding being performed.
So you train in extraction methods from the water, how you approach someone who is either struggling in the water or comatose in the water, or any of a variety of situations of people in the water. So from there, they come up onto the beach. What does the lifeguard do then? And you did mention an assessment process, which has to take place very, very quickly. So they are trained in how to do a physical assessment at any rate. And depending on what they find, Owen, what are the lifeguards trained to do in response?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So for a typical lifeguarding class, we actually give our lifeguards that 30 seconds to recognize and respond. And then we say, you have a total of 90 seconds to actually finish your assessment and start providing care after they've been extricated from the water. And that includes actually putting on additional PPE. So putting on our gloves, putting on our eyewear in the pandemic, we have additional forms of personal protective equipment that we need to be wearing. So all of that actually has a time limit in an American Red Cross course, solely to provide the highest quality care as quickly as possible to the person in need. So we perform two assessments. We perform what's called a primary assessment, where we're looking for life threats. Does this person have a pulse? Is this person breathing? Is this person showing signs of severe life-threatening bleeding? Is this person responsive? Are they able to talk to us? So we're going to identify that pretty quickly in our life, in our primary assessment. Should only take about 5 to 10 seconds to complete that. If we don't recognize any life threats, it's a good day, right? That's a good thing. So we obviously want to then kind of slow ourselves down and get to the problem that may be non-life-threatening. And we do that in what we call our secondary assessment. So we're looking for signs and symptoms of injury or illness. Is there any potential allergic reaction that may be going on? Are there any medications you're taking or haven't taken that we should be aware of? Any medical history, anything that you've eaten or drank today that may have thrown this off, or simply what happened leading up to this emergency? And then we kind of use that approach to form a prognosis for care, right? Is this something that we are able to provide basic first aid or intervention for here, right on the beach or right next to the pool or right next to the water slide? Or do we need to activate emergency medical services? And at that point, you know, we would expect to provide the care that we're able to do and trained to do as lifeguards until EMS personnel arrive and take over.
Before the ambulance arrives, Owen, what can the, and it is a significant situation, what is the lifeguard trained to do in terms of medical protocols or methods or strategies?
Yeah, so lifeguards, actually, it's funny, when I start my class, I often get a lot of 15, 16, 17 year olds who are eager and ready to be lifeguards. And, you know, they're looking at me like, hey, this is gonna be the best summer job ever. And while they're not wrong, I always start out by saying, I hope you guys know that you're here, because lifeguarding is more than just sitting on the beach and getting a tan and watching the water. There's a lot of things that we are trained and able to do as lifeguards that really can save or sustain somebody's life. So if somebody does not have a pulse and is not breathing, we are trained to provide high quality CPR until EMS gets there. We're trained to use an automated external defibrillator or AED. And integrate that into our CPR. We're trained to use emergency oxygen. We're trained to use bag valve masks so we can deliver breaths for the person if they're not breathing. We are trained to control bleeding using tourniquets. So if it's life-threatening bleeding, we're trained to use direct pressure. We are trained to assist people in delivering their EpiPens, using their asthma inhalers, recognizing signs and symptoms of a diabetic emergency and providing them with glucose or sugar until EMS gets there. We're trained to recognize and care for somebody who may be having a stroke, any sort of musculoskeletal injury. So whether it's a limb that needs immobilized, or it is a full head, neck, or spinal injury, maybe they dove into the bottom of the pool and you know, they're unable to move, they're paralyzed. We can actually backboard them and immobilize their head before even getting them out of the water. We can treat for signs and symptoms of shock. There's so many life threats that right there and then a lifeguard can help with and mitigate the situation until it gets worse, until 911 gets there and ultimately provides a little bit more of definitive treatment en route to the hospital.
I guess the lifeguard's job is over once the EMS is there and the person is placed in the ambulance.
So there's a couple sides to that, Hal. So yes, their job of providing care is over, but there's a lot of report writing to be done depending on the situation. If it is a fatal situation or a drowning, I know that I worked on a relief effort this summer of a drowning of a minor where lifeguards had finished with that. And keep in mind, a lot of our lifeguards are young people, right? They're 16, they're 17, and the surf front beaches, the Ocean Cities, the Assateagues, they're going to be a little bit more of the older crowd. So it's going to be your 18, your 19, your 20 year olds and beyond. But some people are really young who are dealing with these emergencies. So while yes, their job of providing care ends, I always tell them it is their job to commit to their own well-being at that point. So there's a lot of resources in the state of Maryland for people who experience death of a patient, of a victim in their care, or if there is some sort of traumatic event that happens, it's their job then to continue to pursue their own well-being, whether it's time off, seeing a professional, and really allowing for themselves to kind of process what they just went through as they had to apply their training to a situation they may not have been expecting.
Oh, and you mentioned Maryland, but you also work in other places, Delaware, for instance, I saw on your website, and some places in Pennsylvania as well. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I'm actually scheduled in Pennsylvania this upcoming weekend. And here in the next couple of weeks, I'm down in Cape Henlopen State Park, training some of their lifeguard staff to be instructors, actually, so they can continue their training throughout the summer. So we travel all over the place.
You had mentioned in one of our earlier conversations that you felt that lifeguards should be recognized as essential personnel. And that sounded like a technical term, Owen. Is essential personnel a technical term for you? And if so, what does that mean?
We can't stop people from using our natural resources, right? Our open water areas. Maryland has the most coastal line of any other state in the United States, if you track all of its water lines. And we can't, and Delaware, I mean, you're right there on the coast as well. We can't stop people from going to these areas. So lifeguards are essential to mitigate and intervene for these risks that may arise while they're there, because it's inevitable that without their intervention, the aquatic community is just simply much safer. So yes, Hal, actually our conclusion during this pandemic was that lifeguards are essential personnel and will remain essential personnel, which has been a huge breakthrough for our industry.
What's the effect of that you were placed earlier in line for COVID shots?
So my staff actually qualified as educators for first responders, and we were actually in tier 1B of our COVID vaccine. And we actually operated out of Anne Arundel County for our vaccine. So we were super happy for that. But I've had a lot of interactions with students' parents prior to them saying now that anybody who is 16 can get the vaccine. A lot of students' parents were emailing me and asking me if lifeguards fall under first responders. And I would say my answer was always, yeah, go for it and try it. And they would come back to me and say, yeah, the state of Maryland was recognizing lifeguards as first responders and giving them vaccines in their earlier rounds of the rollout plans. So that was great to see that we were recognized in that capacity. And of course, glad to see these guys getting their vaccine so it can be a safer summer for them to work out amongst the public outdoors.
Oh, and it seems clear to me, at least, that this pandemic is not over yet. And at the same time, our beaches are opening, our lakes, our other waterfronts are opening. How do you feel about those openings in the midst of what I would say is still this pandemic?
Yeah, so I think that, we've grounded ourselves on this core principle of it's safer outdoors, right? And I think that that's absolutely inevitable. We've eaten outside throughout the winter. A lot of us have spent our holidays outside, distance and wearing masks from our families, but we've tried to keep things outdoors, right? And I think that that is absolutely what we should remain to do. I guess before I give any further insight into it, I highly encourage people that when you're in these outdoor areas or waterfront areas, that you continue to follow public health advice. So wearing your mask, staying distanced, and not putting anybody in harm's way or at risk, especially, these essential personnel that are there to help keep you safe. We ask that you do the same for them. I guess I'm excited to see these reopening, Hal, because it's part of our Eastern Shore culture, right? We like to go outside on the water in the summer. And last year it was like, well, should we do it? Should we not? While yes, we're still amidst this pandemic, I think that we are on a track to achieving a bit of a more normal, quote, summer, if you will, and staying outdoors and following public health advisories and advice at these waterfront areas is absolutely permissible. And we're looking forward to having everybody back this summer and being in full operation.
Well, just in general, Owen, what would you recommend to people who are going to the beaches? What can they do in order to assure their own safety? What should their responsibilities be to assure their own safety at the beaches and lakes and rivers in our area?
Yeah, so a couple things. Now that you know, or at least I've attempted to describe what lifeguards are trained and certified to be able to do, I hope that allows you to at least give a second eye to, is there a lifeguard here? Because no matter what the situation, I am always going to recommend how swim near a lifeguard, period. They are trained to recognize and respond to water-related emergencies, and that in itself is comforting. So please. Please swim near lifeguard. Don't swim alone. Get in the water only if you feel safe and comfortable to do so in the presence of a lifeguard. Parents, keep a close eye on your kids. Remember, Hal said we do babysitting training and lifeguard training. They are not one and the same. So we are not your babysitters at the beach. We are there to be public safety experts, right? We are there to watch the water and intervene as necessary, but not watch your children. So please, you know, keep close eye of your children. Keep them with you. Learn how to swim. Their swim lessons are popping back up across YMCAs, across outdoor pools, across state parks and community facilities. We're teaching people to swim, and it's coming back post-pandemic. Learn how to swim, be preventative, and put yourself in a position to be water competent. Even if it's not something that is like, I'm going to be headed out to do my morning swim every day, at least be in a position to where you're water competent and feel comfortable being around the water in the presence of a lifeguard.
Water, as we saw from Camus' famous paragraph on swimming during the plague in his novel, The Plague, water is a great solace and enjoyment, really, for all of us. But as you've indicated, water can be a lethal environment. It doesn't care. It is unkind. So I want to thank you for the work you do to make that environment as safe as possible. Thank you very much. And thank you for sharing your knowledge and information with us here on Delmarva today. I greatly appreciate it.
Thanks, Hal. It was a pleasure to be here. Remember, respect the water. It's like you said, it can be lethal, but it can also be, you know, the best summertime activity, outdoor activity, and relaxation technique that one could find. So it was a pleasure being here, and thank you for your time.
Also, Owen, respect your lifeguard. Thank you again, and thanks to all of you for listening. This is Delmarva Today. I'm your host, Harold Wilson.